This is Colorado Matters from CPR News. I'm Ryan Warner. Colorado poet Mike Henry muses on everyday life, an email from Amazon, a trip to the optometrist, or his daughters playing with dandelions. Henry is founder and executive director of Lighthouse Writers Workshop in Denver. His latest book of poetry is called Active Gods. And Michael, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
The poem you chose to start the book with and that we'll start the interview with is called Prayers. It's an interesting combination of prayer and desire. How did it come to you before we have you read it?
Well, it came to me pretty much out of nowhere. I think I wanted to write a more sort of formal sounding poem, a quieter poem. And I seem to write a lot about birds. So I think I started with just that image of birds flying around the house. And then somehow it went to an image of somebody praying. And I'm not sure why that happened.
Okay, well, let's have you read Prayers.
Okay. Each prayer you whisper is a small bird rising up, alighting on a branch in the tree of desire, twisted gray arms, flashing leaves. These birds will not enter heaven, will not lose themselves in bright clouds or run into picture windows. They hover and settle in the ivy wall along the garden, their small voices ringing bells, their flitting nerves unseen. You know their closeness each day, wing brush against your cheek when raking the leaves, a shock of breath. At dawn, they wake you, their conversations a chatter of words without punctuation or denouement. When you gave them up on your knees in flannel pajamas, your hands pressed together, smooth candle flame of fingers, you believed they would come to rest in God's ear and make your life something else than what it is. But you know, they are just gray-brown finches with hearts like ours, searching for seed, building downy nests in the eaves of the house.
It makes me think you have a fair number of unanswered prayers.
I think we all do. Our existence is built on desire. I know you're supposed to not wish for anything and supposed to be happy with what you have. But I think any person, you're sometimes accosted by your mind. And sometimes the desires are small things. For me, I think as a poet, a lot of times, especially in the poems that I write, the desire is just to understand what this experience is like. What is it like to be a human being every single day?
You have taken some pretty mundane moments in your life and turned them into poems, like a trip to the optometrist. And why don't we hear the poem, first of all, at the optometrist, and then talk about finding beauty or interest in the everyday.
The eye doctor led me to the chart, and I always thought the top letter was E. So I said E, and she said, wrong, try again. So I actually looked and got it right. It was H. Went down a few rows, and then, isn't this always the story? It all got muddled, and I could not say which was which or what was what, so I tried my best, squinting, hopeful. The doctor said I wasn't 20/20 anymore. Of course not. I'm not a kid. My cells are growing old, ragged, unsupple, littered with mutations and false codons. Anyway, after a while, I got my eyeglass prescription and fell into the murderous summer noon, dazzled by all the color, my pupils big black holes sucking in the world. I stood woozy on the bland sidewalk as everything flowed past into the past, shimmering and blurred, and, story of my life, there was nowhere I could think to turn, no DNA sequence prescribing what I was supposed to do next.
What I love about this poem is that it captures the vulnerability you feel during an eye exam. And
right.
it's a test, right? And you feel like it's a test, but you actually have no control over your outcome.
Right. I want to do well. I want to get 100%. Exactly. And as you get older, you don't do very well. You do worse and worse, I think.
Yeah. And you take that personally, I guess.
You do. And I think, you know, you realize, oh, I'm getting older. And boy, that's really sort of a dizzying experience. The things that you thought were stable are no longer stable.
How old are you?
I'm 47.
And how much of this aging process shows up in poetry?
More and more. It seems like I think that was another thing that surprised me about writing this book is sort of, you know, I write a lot about being a parent, and I think there's sort of the flip side of writing about being a parent and watching these amazing young people sort of, they're the most charming and interesting people you could ever meet. As they sort of come to fruition, you're starting down the downward slide. And I don't mean to sound morose. I think in some ways it's sort of a beautiful process. But it's often a surprising one.
In a way, it may be nature's gift to you for putting up with the aging, that you have youth in the form of children to observe.
Right, right.
Maybe that's a universal kindness.
I think so. I hope so, right. Until they send you off to a retirement home, and then who knows what's going to happen.
And they expect you to pay for college.
Exactly, yes.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner, and we're speaking with the Denver poet Michael Henry. His new collection of poems is called Active Gods. So you certainly focus on getting older. In your poem Seam, you take on the feelings, though, of a young man, and you capture those feelings with really strong imagery. This section, for example, you and he are seam rippers. You tear and rend. Sinews crack and separate, like when you used to brawl, when you fractured your fist and jaw, those small nickels and pins of bone. There's a fight going on here, is there not?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think this sort of poem is probably one I used to write more often. I think before I had kids, a lot of my poems were about my experience as being a young person. And of course, being a sensitive sort of poet type, which I didn't really want to be as growing up. I think I fought against that. And in many ways, I fought against the world. I think a lot of young men do that. And so I think this poem came out of that idea of there's a certain patriarchy that you sometimes are, you know, sort of given to you. It's like, this is how men handle things in our family. And I feel like, not that this is too autobiographical, but I think, you know, that was something that I've always been thinking about. You know, what did my grandfather and my father teach me? And a lot of that was, you know, the only emotion you should show is violence. And so this poem is about, you know, being sort of a person in the world that fights their way into and out of things, but also fights against oneself.
You resisted being the sensitive, observant poet type, you're saying?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know I was going to be a poet for a long time.
When did it occur to you?
It occurred, you know, ironically, it occurred after my mother passed away when I was 22. And I think in some ways, her passing made me realize not only, you know, the typical idea of life is very fragile, but also, you know, her dreams and hopes for me were something that I needed to accept.
And her dreams for you were to acknowledge that more sensitive part of you?
I think to be a successful person, if it was really up to her, I would be a doctor. But okay. I got a D in physics 101 in college, so that was not going to happen. So I think what she wanted was a sensitive, intelligent young man.
Were you a fighter when you were young? Were you involved in the kind of brawl you painted in that poem?
No. I ran away from. I was a big chicken. Mm. And if I ever did get in a fight, you know, in like sixth grade, I wasn't very good at it. But also, I think that it's traumatic. You know, and I'm always amazed by how other men usually can handle a fight and not be just sort of emotionally just taken apart by it.
And yet you had some regret that you weren't that type.
Oh, yeah. I thought I should be. Huh. So I thought there was something wrong with me.
Is it painful to look back on that time in your life?
No. I mean, the funny thing is it's given me a real rich set of memories to write about.
You often write from the perspective of a parent, and you write about the effect of watching your two daughters blowing on dandelion fluff. But what's fascinating is the imagery in this poem, which I think is called Incessantly. Is that
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. That's right.
It shifts, and it ends with, knocks me to my knees with gale force winds and tidal washes. What are you talking about there? What is it that knocks you to your knees?
I think it's just the love for these little people who are just so amazing and do things that you would never expect. I think it's also, in the back of my head when I was writing this poem, I was thinking about that sort of chaos theory, you know, the butterfly's wings flapping will create, you know, a tsunami somewhere else. And I was imagining, you know, these dandelion seeds creating something that is, you know, earth changing.
In some of your poems, you ignore the standard writing admonition not to use pop culture references.
Right.
You know, writers are told this because a reference like that could become dated or not understood by some readers. Yet you are absolutely willing to mention iPods or write about current bands or movies. Talk about that decision and whether you hesitate at all.
I don't. I probably did when I was in graduate school. I had this teacher. He was a wonderful teacher. His name was Bill Knott, and he would berate us regularly, the workshop students. And he would say, "Why aren't you writing about the things that are in your life? Why aren't you writing about this? Why aren't you writing about that?" And so I think I like writing about pop culture references. I do think today that sort of, you know, that idea that you shouldn't do that because you date the poems is probably not as strong of a rule. You know, I mean, all rules are made to be broken, I think, for writing. It's not as strong anymore, partly because the cycle of consumption of pop culture is so quick. Immediately, it becomes nostalgic or it becomes retro, and retro is always okay, it seems like.
Oh, I see. The very fact that it's ephemeral actually speaks to how cool it becomes because of the retro quality.
And again, maybe that's just a hope. Maybe it's not cool. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. If your poem mentions Kesha or something.
I don't know who that is. Well, I mean, I do know. But yeah, I probably wouldn't write a Kesha poem. More like the Smiths and the Replacements, yeah.
Got it. You are a sensitive guy, the Smiths.
Yes, exactly.
You actually turned an email from Amazon into a poem, and let's have you read this. It's called Expectations. Is this word for word, by the way, from the email?
This is word for word. I did not change a single thing. I did not take any language out whatsoever.
So is it theft?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Yes, because I'm such a rebel. I stole it from Amazon. They steal so much from writers. I should steal something
okay.
back.
Okay.
Yeah. Expectations, a found poem. Though we had expected to be able to send this item to you, we've since found that it is not available from any of our sources at this time. We realize this is disappointing news to hear, and we apologize for the inconvenience we have caused you. We must also apologize for the length of time it has taken us to reach this conclusion. Until recently, we had still hoped to obtain this item for you. We have canceled this item from your order.
I love that you adopt this nasally
right.
like, telephone operator persona.
I try.
Is that something you do based on who you think is speaking?
I think you
didn't read it as yourself.
No, I think, and you've had this experience with poets probably, that they read like poets. And so that part of that is me reading like a poet. I think also it's sort of trying to play up the sort of interesting elements of the language of this found piece. Because, you know, you could read it as prose and it would just sound like an email you got from Amazon. But there was just something really beautiful and kind of almost fake nice about it.
Mm-hmm. Inauthentic.
Yeah, inauthentic, yes, about it that I absolutely loved. I thought, oh, this has to be a poem.
But you're right that if you just read that as prose, it would be quite prosaic. But to add some rhythm to it just gives it a whole new life.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the saying goes, poetry is at its heart, it's a vocal art. It's something that's meant to be read aloud. I do think, and I'm always aware of this when I'm reading, is not to try and sound too poetic, but you have to sound a little poetic, I suppose.
So is it often that you'll found poetry?
Found poetry.
Yeah. Do you often see poetic things in, you know, billboard messages or, I don't know, where what are other examples for you?
I do, and this is sort of probably an OCD thing, and my wife always just looks at me like I'm crazy. I tend to count syllables, so we'll be watching a movie, and she can tell, I mean, this is embarrassing. I count syllables by flexing different muscles, so left bicep, left calf, right calf. And that's a sort of an iambic meter. So the dump, da dump, da dump, da dump. So we'll be watching a movie together and I'll be twitching and she'll be like, "You're counting syllables again, aren't you?" And I'll say, "Yeah, I'm doing that." So I just have a habit of doing that. I don't know why. I've always been like that. It's really kind of weird.
We're going to end there.
Great.
I just love it. Thank you so much for being with us, Michael.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.